Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
It is hour two of the Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday. Where are you listening right now? Wherever it is, I'm appreciative. Is everybody hearing the show, Dan? Acid rain, sunspots, hordes of locusts. Like, we got everything good?
We're good.
All right, awesome. Good. Chuck Oliver Show, 9 states, 56 sticks. Thank y'all for the blessing. Appreciate SEC Mike coming on. Mike Bratton, hour one. Woody Womack, Rivals, talking Cruton. Oh, and about 15 minutes from now, Brad Sinkiff, 105.5 The Roar. Every morning, Monday through Friday, we're going to talk Clemson. And then also from Tampa Way, Tampa Bay Times, Matt Baker, we can talk Florida and Florida State. And there is just a general listing, it appears, a general listing, like in nautical terms, of the Florida program right now. I said somehow this impossible truth, I think I observed it. Like 2022 was almost a year that like nothing happened at Florida. It was a total like void of a 12-month experience. I've seen coaches show up before, and like Hugh Freeze, he's been at Auburn, and like Auburn looks like it's going to be a much improved product. He's taken over something that was not very good, but it looks like it's going to be much improved. You see some cases like Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech. Do you know what Jeff Collins looked at like Georgia Tech looked like a year after Jeff Collins had been there? It looked like a fired coach after year three or four had left the program. Like, he took over for Paul Johnson. And I'm saying Billy Napier, it's kind of like it's just been a void. It disappeared into some, like, celestial vortex. And then the portal opened and it dropped out the program. Oh, what happened? It was Land of the Lost. Or somewhere down the river with Chaka. But, no, the world actually happened. And so Jeff Collins shows up and he takes over a program a year later. It's like, dude, did you go to lunch for a year? And then after 3 years, it really looked like the kind of program, not that we're entering year four, it looked like what you handed off to a new coach. So it can go any way. At Florida, do you know what I'm not used to it looking like? Like an entire year never happened. Like Gainesville is the town that time forgot. I'm not used to, and you exit at Archer and then just off into the never seen from again. There's some Stephen King story where a couple's in a car and they're taking a dirt road and they wound up in a town with like dead Elvis as the sheriff and dead Marilyn Monroe as the waitress. It's a Stephen King thing. And you turn off this road and just keep driving and all of a sudden you realize we're in the middle of, like, that's not Gainesville. Gainesville didn't lose a year of existing. It kind of did. And I don't know how you would with what I think was the best freshman running back in the SEC, one of them in the country. There's weird non-usage going on in Gainesville regarding running backs. Did y'all see the year that, and especially at the beginning, y'all see the year Damian Pierce had for Houston? They wouldn't use him in Gainesville. ETN's little brother? Wow. Some of the things I believe you could have done more consistently with Anthony Richardson, boy, there were a lot of qualifiers in that. I don't know how an entire year can just not exist. And that is the impression that it was, you didn't get any, like, I don't see what you put in place as the foundation. I saw that you brought in maybe the best offensive lineman in all of Group of Five, and he's not there now. Maybe the best offensive lineman you've lined up in a decade, and he's gone. When I said all of those qualifiers about maybe, possibly, could have, I think, with Anthony Richardson, he's gone. And honestly, like, there, y'all remember Penny Hardaway? Go back like 30. Penny Hardaway came out of Memphis to the NBA. Like, Grant Hill's another guy. In Major League Baseball, Daryl Strawberry, Dwight Gooden. There are some players you look at and go, I don't think I ever saw the best of this guy. I really don't think I ever saw the best of this guy. Folks, that's Anthony Richardson. I don't think we ever saw the best. I mean, I know we didn't. Individual plays, and even on some Saturdays, you're like, wait a minute, we thought, well, that's the best of Anthony Richardson. No, it wasn't. Because the best Anthony Richardson isn't seven plays against South Florida 2 years ago. The best Anthony Richardson is he went 24 for 31 with no turnovers and the yards and the points. He's gone. Gone. I don't know. I'm not going to have any. I have nothing negative to say about Montrell Johnson. I'm just saying there are really tough, good, physical running backs who can catch the ball and know how to pick up a blitz and all kinds of things. And Montrell was a lot of that stuff. You know the phrase we use here, game wreckers. ETN's a game wrecker. I don't know why you didn't use him more. In the NBA draft every year, and across the league, I actually heard this with Luka when he was coming out of the draft, and I was like, I don't have an answer for it. I said, I don't have an answer that you are looking for. Do you know what the question would flummox everybody about? Well, what position will he play? Okay, now I've got my answer, but what position will – I can't spend a top five pick on Luka. What position will he play? I don't have an answer that you want. Because you want to hear small forward, power forward, point guard. You want to hear like a position. All right, you know what my answer was? Well, you can't top five pick. What will you do with him? I don't care. What position does he play? He plays the position. Here's the ball. There are times you don't need to ask any other questions. Guy's a game wrecker. What position will he play? I don't care. Call him whatever you want. All right, call Luka a wide receiver if you want. Draft him and then give him the ball. That's what you do. With ETN, well, blitz pick up and understanding of the pass game, and I get it. You were Florida and you were struggling. How about this? You know, and you're right about that. To identify the blitzer, you know what's the worst one? Is when they don't identify. He's not good in pass protection, like he's not tough or he's not willing to. That's not it. Folks, most times when you hear any coach listening right now, I don't know, tweet Dan and say, that's right. He's not good in pass protection. It's not that he's undersized or he's not tough or he's not willing. It's most often he didn't see it. Like, he didn't recognize it. And so I can't have him on the field because he's not good. It's not that he's not tough or doesn't. It's that on second and eight, here comes a blitz from, like a delayed blitz from the inside backer that he doesn't see. Folks, it just comes, here comes 51 steaming right through the A-gap. So it's important to be able to pick, okay, I've said all that, figure it out. Do you know what he doesn't have to diagnose? Toss right. No diagnosis in that. I formation, or motion a tight end, or I don't care what you do. Give him a lead blocker. Follow your lead blocker until he makes contact and go opposite. That literally is the instruction for a tailback who has a lead blocker. All right, you see your teammate there, Gary? Like, you remember, we had a pregame meal. Gary was there. Follow Gary, and as soon as he makes contact with somebody on the other team, just go the other direction. That is lead blocker football. There's nothing to figure out, and ETN, every time he got the ball, could go to the house. So I appreciate the toughness and the blitz pickup and the ability to catch the ball from Montrell Johnson. I need special game wreckers, and you had one. You didn't use him enough, not nearly. So when you're Alabama And Nick Saban told this story on our air. He's like, Derrick Henry couldn't catch the ball in the pass pattern, and he couldn't pick up a blitz. And so I told him I'd sit him on the bench. And he did. And he gave the ball to, who would he have given the ball to instead? Trent Richardson? Okay, works for me. I don't know, Jalston Fowler, Eddie Lacy? Who got the ball when Derrick Henry was waiting to get the football at Alabama? You know who Billy Napier didn't have? Any of those players. So I've always, football's kind of simple. Get some game wreckers and then look at the math. Get you a game wrecker, whoever that is. I don't care. Well, they're expecting it. Good. Tell them. It's third and two. We're going to give it to seven. Why? Because he's better than all your guys. And we're going to have some math on our side with either motion or an extra blocker. Or we'll split the guy out, take blocker with him, and then go inside. There's all kinds of things to do. There's a way to figure it out. And Florida didn't figure out any of it. Not consistently enough based on the very few kids that showed up every Saturday that looked like game wreckers. So I've tried to give as many layers of understanding as possible. It looked like a void of a year in Gainesville, and that's not a program that the whole year ever is supposed to come and go, and I don't remember anything happening there. That's not really what that program is supposed to be. That's supposed to be, wait a minute, Missouri, were they number one for a week in 2009? No, that was 2010, Chuck. Was it 2010? Yeah. Dan's back there. Was it 2008?
I want to say, was it seven?
Okay. That's the point. Hey, what was that one week where Mizzou was number one in America till they could not handle prosperity, and 3 days later, Oklahoma just dumped a sack of bricks on them? What year was that, that one week?
I think it was the crazy weekend of 2007 that allowed LSU to get in.
Boom. Maybe it was that day. Maybe. Point is, that's not what the Florida program is. Florida, we're like, what year did they win the national championship and get the big gargantuan trophy? Which one? That's the Florida program. And it's like Rod Serling in the Twilight Zone just sucked up Gainesville for 12 months.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Nine states, 56 sticks. Thank y'all for the blessing. We talk college football. Been doing it since the beginning of the 14th season, so about 8.5 years now. Thank y'all again. Context is a word, boy, it is at the top of my list because it is very easy to make truthful statements, and they can be like Bill Clinton drew, legally accurate but misleading. If you look in the state of South Carolina right now, do you know what a legally accurate but misleading statement is? Clemson can't get nobody in the top nine in their own state. Now, that's true. Clemson's first commit in state is the 10th highest ranked player. He is a wide receiver that is rated 87. I'll just go by 24/7. He rated 87 points so-and-so. Do you know that the lowest rated recruit in the entire Clemson class is rated 86 points so-and-so? So everybody above the top nine in state, Dabo's got a bunch of them from other places. So it's true that they are swinging a miss, not one in the top nine in South Carolina. That's not the whole picture. Want to welcome on right now a guy who can give us all kinds of context when it comes to Clemson football. From 105.5 The Roar, he deals it out 9 to noon every Monday through Friday. It's Brad Senkiff. How you doing, brother?
Chuck, I'm doing great, man. Good to talk to you.
I appreciate your time. Boy, Dabo, the program is in flames. Nobody in the top nine in state. And I got to admit, I got a text message, and I was like, that's pretty provocative. I'll investigate. It's a plenty fine state year for in-state recruits in South Carolina, but my statement that he's got guys every bit as good as those just from other areas, does that hold, or is there a behind-the-scenes issue?
I don't think there's a behind-the-scenes issue. Well, this stuff's cyclical. You know, like some years, there's just a really good, kind of great fit players that Clemson goes after, and they usually get Yep. He's going to be the highlight of their 2023 class. I don't think it's a problem. I don't think it's anything that is to make a big deal of, other than it just wasn't a year where Clemson felt like they needed to get some guys. Now, they did address a couple of needs for some in-state guys, and you were talking about some of that. You know, they needed some help at running back, and they made a late move on a Jarvis Green down at Dutch Fork in Columbia area, who's an exceptional player who I think is going to help Clemson, even though he's just, you know, quote-unquote, just a three-star. They got a receiver out of Greenville that's probably a little bit underrated. So when they went in-state, they got some of the guys who they feel like fit what they need in terms of this class, and they don't recruit, and they don't need to recruit just based off where you're ranked in your state.
Continuing, Brad Sinkiff, again, 105.5 The Roar. Okay, I'm going to call myself out and all fans because we're just funny and we're weird. I got a friend of mine, and she actually thinks that it's a big deal when she gets her, like, season tickets show up on, like, July 25th versus August 1st, and, like, they compare at church, and I got my season. I'm like, well, there's still no game for 4 or 5 weeks. Like, we think getting our tickets in the mail is this big thing, and, you know, even though there's still no game. Schedule release is the same way. Like, it's January, but today is a big, big day for the schedule release. Is that right?
No, of course it is. Everybody wants to know, you know, where they need to start making their hotel plans and how they can schedule their weddings and their family events and all that.
Borrow the family house at Hartwell?
Yeah, oh, yeah, exactly. When is the big, you know, first tailgate opportunity? You don't need 8 months to plan that out, but it certainly doesn't hurt.
Is that when? Later today, maybe? Or
tonight.
That's tonight, okay.
Tonight, yep.
All right, so the non-conference is known. Notre Dame, I guess, and again, this is a November game. I'm not asking for a preview, but just the environment to me is interesting because Notre Dame came there in either 78 or 79, maybe, and it was one of the first huge events I got to be part of. Clemson has graduated past that. But still, talk about the vibe of when Notre Dame shows up, because even for a program like Clemson, that's still a big, big, big different sort of home game, or is it?
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, I was there in 2015 in the pouring down rain. Thankfully, I was in the press box, so I stayed dry. But, you know, that was as high-profile game. And anytime I bring up on the show, like, what's your signature game that you'll never forget? I get flooded with the 2015 Notre Dame game. And a lot of it's because of the weather, but it also the magnitude. That game was hyped up for 2 weeks because they had a bye before it. It just became this huge deal. Brian Kelly brought in this highly ranked Notre Dame team. And, you know, Clemson fans love nostalgia. Clemson fans love the pageantry of college football, like a lot of other fan bases do. So when you get to play Notre Dame, of course it's a huge deal. And it's going to be a huge deal again. And, of course, you know, last year, Clemson got to go up there and got smacked around a little bit. So that adds a little bit of intrigue and maybe some heightened urgency in this game coming up on November the 4th.
All right, brother. Well, I appreciate the input as always. And as we get a little closer to spring and certainly the draft and combine and all that, I want to hear about any impressions you have of the Clemson kids up in Indianapolis, but also spring practice and everything. So I appreciate you checking in with us today, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck.
All right, Brad Sinkiff, again, press box 9 to noon, 105.5 The Roar. Yeah, schedule release is a big, big, big deal. Now, there are times that, why is this true? It's true because we say it's true. You know that's marketing, right? Like, again, Wharton School of Business, Penn, that's Ivy League. You want the best in business? Go to Wharton. Somewhere at Wharton, you'll be in a class and a marketing truism. How can we claim this? Is it true? Yes, it's true. How do we know it? We know it because we'll say it's true. We'll tell them it's true. Now, I'm not talking like blatant outright lies. I'm saying like Oliver Airways is number one in customer safety. You know what? No. I'm saying anything that can be an opinion. It's the most comfortable ride in the air. That sort of thing. Is that true? It will be. Why? Because we're going to say it's true. It's a big deal that we're about to release our schedule. Is it? Well, it is because we're going to tell everybody it's a big deal. The NFL created out of nowhere. Do you know what schedule release used to be? I'm going to go way back in time to when I used to steal the sports page every day in high school. I had these long wooden spindles, and I would go in the whole paper, and I'd just take the sports section out every single day for 4 years. So do you know what schedule release in the NFL was? Every day in the sports section, usually on page 7, because if it was an 8 section, then 7 was the last page that was still inside, and you could sell the back ad, and that was too valuable. So the last bit of newsprint that had any sort of actual value to it, like information-wise, oh, yeah, yesterday the NFL released its – it would be on the it was called transactions. The last actual page of the sports section said transactions, and it would show standings and trades and suspensions and this, that, and the other. Oh, yeah, the NFL had a draft. Here are the results. Is that enough coverage? Well, it's a guy reading names off a card. Do you know what the NFL decided to tell us? The NFL draft, you want to watch this stuff. And we do. I watched it in Las Vegas with like 500,000 people last year. I don't know how many people were there. Schedule release, we were told, this is a big deal. And I think the thing is, it's not like I'm in on the joke. You should be as smart as me. You know what? Tonight, 7 o'clock, ACC Network. Schedule reveal. I'm kind of interested because, honestly, if I'm college football jonesing on January 30th, do you know what the ACC schedule release does? Kind of scratches the itch. You know, I'm pulling up to the corner. Hey, I want to score a schedule release. All right, well, come back in a couple hours. I'll have what you need. The ACC's like, tonight we got you. The NFL schedule release, I think, is in May, like early May. Do you know why? Because nothing else is in May. Got the draft in April. We got free agency in March. We got the combine in February. Folks, every single month of the year, it's a schedule release, they told us, and you care about this. And we looked at him and were like, yeah, I guess I do.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
I may have been unfair in my assessment. I have no investment in this, but I may have been unfair in my assessment of the first 12 months of the Bill Napier experience in Gainesville. I said it was almost like a void. It was almost like UF was the program that time forgot. And they're floating down the river on that raft with Chaka and whoever else. And I have no idea. It literally, in Florida, is too good of a program. Mizzou can get lost for a year. Hey, what happened in Como? Oh, I didn't check in. Gainesville, I literally look up there and go, I don't know how any sort, and you didn't fall back maybe, but I have no idea what sort of cinder block you put in place, at least to kind of help you in 23. It's like the year didn't even exist. Maybe I'm being too harsh. I want to welcome on right now, this guy will know, college football reporter for the Tampa Bay Times. It's a big, giant paper, digital as well, and he covers college football for him. It is Matt Baker. Matt, how you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I appreciate your time. Give me a more informed opinion, because I look at Florida and I go, man, I'm not even a grad or a fan, and I have standards for that place, and it can't be just sort of a void year. Like, a first-year coach has to come in, and I need to see something after 12 months. What am I missing that's really in place here?
So that's a really good question. I could argue you're not being mean enough, frankly, because a void is one thing. avoid suggests that, like, whatever happened was just kind of blah. Florida might have been below that, right? Where obviously on the field it was not good. 6-7 is nowhere near good enough. And you can say, well, you know, Billy didn't inherit the most talent in the world, and that's fair. But you look at kind of the recruiting class is the other thing. You know, right now I'm looking at the 247 composite. The Gators class is 12th in the country. And some of it's because it's a little bit small. They've got 18 blue chip commits or signees. I think one of them is expected to sign this week, which is a good number. It's a healthy number. It's one of the best they've had in a while. But I think it was also fair to expect more from Billy than a top 12 class, even with all those caveats. I mean, I think people expected him to recruit kind of the way Saban did after in his first full cycle at Bama, and the way Kirby did in his first full cycle, and Urban and some of those guys. And Billy's got a good class, maybe a very good class, but it's not elite either. And he hasn't added enough elite talent through the transfer portal, at least that, in my opinion, to make you think that, all right, he's definitely got it. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying about Void, but it's fair to be a little bit harsher than just looking at him as blah. Because it's hard to find a lot that you can definitely say they're better at. Organizationally, infrastructure, yeah, but that's kind of hard to see. And until you see something, it's hard to expound on it.
Thanksgiving weekend, I'm talking to a buddy of mine. It's a Florida grad, and he sends a check every year and all that. He's like, so what's going on with the collective? And I was like, well, I think it's getting better. I talked to him a week ago, and I was like, I don't think kids are getting paid, which is about the worst thing for anyone on the outside to have, because there are parents and coaches and kids who have the same impression I do. I don't think kids are getting paid. Just the impression is enough. How close to the reality is that? Because it's pretty easy to have that impression, I believe.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer to that. And that's the problem with the collectives. And honestly, with the system that we have here, Chuck, to be honest with you. You know, like Billy Napier and his 1,000 analysts or whatever, I don't think they have to worry about their paycheck coming every other Friday and through direct deposit or however it comes. I think they know it's coming. But with collectives, because College Sports Inc., and again, this isn't a Florida issue, it's a bigger issue, they collectively decided to outsource paying players to third parties, where you're going to have situations like this, where people are literally talking in checks that they can't cash. And I think you're exactly right. The truth, to some degree, does not matter here in terms of who's to blame and getting into the weeds of that. The fact is, the perception is that Florida could not or did not or would not pay a player what was agreed upon. Now, it doesn't matter who Florida is. It doesn't matter that it's a third party that's not the Gators. It doesn't matter whether Billy Napier was sitting in the room negotiating it or he didn't hear about it after. All that stuff, I mean, it matters. But in terms of public perception, if I'm a 17-year-old recruit or a 21-year-old transfer or the parent of one of those or a coach, whatever, what matters is the headlines and the main takeaways, which is exactly what you said. Florida wasn't living up to their bargain. And that's an enormous, enormous issue. You know, Billy Napier still hasn't really addressed what happened. And you know, I'm hopeful that he will potentially on Wednesday on signing day and kind of give his side of the story. And that we'll get more on this, because it's been kind of a Florida side isn't fully out there. I don't think that does anybody any good, because it is going to be an issue. I cannot imagine it's not an issue. You know, players and recruits say NIL is not necessarily the biggest deal, but we're talking about thousands of dollars,
yes, it is.
Millions of dollars. That's a huge deal, man.
Like, you know, you and I say this sometimes, I'm not meaning to make you uncomfortable. You went to Northwestern, right?
I did.
All right, that's different. That's Wake Forest. That's Stanford. That's a different level. I say this all the time. Love my degree. I went to Auburn. I could get my diploma, except for a couple of the vet school and things like that. I can get my diploma at Mississippi State or Clemson or Georgia. For most kids, it never really – the education never really mattered anyway. Now, I don't think necessarily what happens on the field at least initially matters to them. Name, image, likeness is first – and it has replaced size of the stadium or what bowl they played in, I think.
It depends on the player that you ask, honestly. And some of them will view it that way. Whether they'll say that directly, maybe, maybe not, because there's still a stigma associated with the idea of taking the money. And it's a weird idea, right? Like, literally anybody else in the world say, okay, you got offered this, you know, X from school, from this school, and Y from that school. You take the money. And that's a normal thing. but there's a stigma associated with it. I mean, like, I've even seen, you know, complaints from people about Jaden Rashada only in it for the money. Well, I got news for you. If somebody's offering me millions of dollars, yeah, that would be an issue. I don't care. Like, I'm not going to Old State View for the tailgating atmosphere, right? Let's call it what it is. And if these, a lot of these players, high-end players, have a chance to make a lot of money, I can't begrudge them for that. Mm-hmm. And again, maybe it's not the only thing, because school does matter to some of them, or which school will develop me and give me the best chance at the pros, where the real money is. So it shouldn't necessarily be the only factor for a lot of them, because there are other things as well. But if somebody says I'm going where they pay me for, or pay me the most, I can't begrudge that guy.
Yeah, I said, when I was 17, decision making, I had a mullet and drove an IROG Z28. We don't make good decisions at 17. And if somebody's throwing millions of dollars at you, you're going to take it. Wrapping up, Matt Baker, Tampa Bay Times. I want to ask you, this is kind of off the beaten path a little bit. Can I ask you about the stadium thing that's going on down there in Tampa and St. Peter's area?
Absolutely.
All right,
absolutely.
Because here's my understanding, and tell me, I think I can summarize this properly. Like, Tampa and St. Pete like to spit at each other a little bit, and so there was a race who could get the baseball stadium up, and without a team, like 30 years ago, St. Petersburg was like, yeah, let's just build a stadium and maybe something good will happen. We'll get a baseball team at some point. So they built a stadium as quickly as they could, and it's never been a good stadium. Is that a fair, quick summary? And what's going on? Is there going to finally be a real baseball joint down there?
So, you know, your last point is the billion-dollar question here. It's been, since I've lived here, which is going on 12 years now almost, the stadium issue has been the biggest topic in Tampa Bay sports. What's going to happen? And the latest news, literally within the last couple hours, the mayor in St. Pete has announced their plans. There were a couple proposals on what are we going to do with the site of Tropicana Field. What are we going to do with the Trop? And he selected the one that was backed by the Rays. The Rays were one of the partners. So now the question is, what do they actually do? Because the proposal has a stadium there. So are they actually going to make that work? Are they going to make the money work? Who is going to pay for it? Am I, a taxpayer, going to pay for it? How much are the Rays going to pay? And then the idea of, well, what if Tampa is still a possibility? Because I still think it could be, depending on how it shakes out. So they're still in the process of this. Today was a notable step because they chose the one with the Rays, and the Rays are going to be partners. And whatever the site of you know, whatever happens to that site in Tropicana Field, which is a huge thing for the city of St. Pete and the Tampa Bay area. So they did make a step forward on that. But what does it actually mean at the end of the day? I don't know yet, because even if they put the nicest stadium in the world right there in downtown St. Pete, I'm still going to have to drive 45 minutes to an hour from the Baker Manor across the bridge on a Tuesday night in May or June or whatever to go to a game. And until they can fix that problem, I don't know if it matters how important, how nice the stadium is. The location's still probably not great, and that's why they've been in this mess for, again, as long as I've lived here.
Yeah, in fact, I don't think that this is a unique experience, unfortunately. First time I sat in a chair there, I was silent for about 30 seconds. I looked around, I was like, why is it so dark? Like, why is it so shadowy in here? Why? Like, at least it liked the place, you know? But it was just a sort of a different, weirdish experience. And I was wondering if maybe they're going to get it right the second time around, and if, like, Tampa's going to play half their games in Montreal or something, so... well, Matt,
yeah, they tried that idea, and Major League Baseball rejected that. So right now they're going forward with St. Pete, but we'll see if that's what happens in 2027 when all this comes to roost.
I've said, folks, Tampa's one of those places that needs a PR director. Like, I love going to Tampa, and it's viewed as, you know, start the games at 5 so you can go to Piccadilly at 4 and straight in. I'm like, that's not what Tampa has to be. So anyway, Matt, thanks for your time, brother.
You got it. Thank you.
All right, Matt Baker, Tampa Bay Times. It's got that reputation. It's like Del Boca Vista. And it's more than that. I'm not even talking about Ybor City. Ybor City. Dan, have you ever been to Ybor City? Do you know what it is?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's basically a junior South Beach.
like a pretendish plastic-ish, like a run at South Beach. So don't go there. I'm Tampa, I love Tampa. I got no issue at all with Tampa. It's not even a beach town, really. It's a coast town.
You're 100% right. I mean, I think if nothing else, it gets kind of the perception that, like, the area closer to Fort Myers should be getting, because that area right there, that's kind of like the spring training corridor of Bradenton and Dunedin and all these areas. Those are exactly what you're talking about. But Tampa, St. Pete, Clearwater, those areas, those are party towns.
And can I speak truth? We speak truth on this show, right? I never had a bad time out of Piccadilly. I never had it. David knows what's up.
Can't confirm. You're right.
The chicken fried steak with the white gravy and that big fat yeast roll that they don't serve you in elementary school anymore. I'm telling you, I've never had a bad experience about Piccadilly once in my life. So, yeah, well, they want to go to Piccadilly and then straight to the Rays game and be home by 8:30. Actually, you know what? Like on a Tuesday, am I out of line to say, if you can promise me Piccadilly at 4, Major League game at 5, I'm home by 8:30? I'm all right, check the box, man. Color me happy on that Tuesday night living in my Tampa suburb. But anyway, we're going to break. We will continue on this Monday next.
To the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
I think what Slay Nagel did down at Tulane is a guy to watch. You know, he did a terrific job this past year. Maybe Colin Klein at Kansas State, who's been there for a while, called plays this last year, or Coach Klein in there at Kansas State, would be some, you know, some other names. I think the guy at Duke is somebody that that they may look to. Greg Roman is a name.
Chris Lowe. Y'all know him. ESPN.com. He is the – he runs their SEC coverage and a lot of their college football coverage. But Chris Lowe was on with Jocks, which over in Birmingham, Heritage, just – I mean, can't even talk college football in the South without Jocks. It's just tremendous, tremendous job they do over there. It's Cole and McElroy and all that bunch. Been that way for a long time. So he is giving names – to consider maybe beyond the initial list we all thought with Alabama and the OC search. And he said Greg Roman. He said the guy at Duke, he's talking about Kevin Johns, right? And it's interesting because what is Elko, in addition to a guy who gets the smarty pants stuff, because he's from Harvard or Princeton or Yale or Brown or Dartmouth or Cornell or Penn. Mike Elko's from the Ivy League, and so he gets the smarty pants stuff, which it fits at Duke, but he's defensive-minded. And so when you have a team that has a toast season, a little pop-up season, I call it, when you have a program that has an out-of-nowhere better than it's supposed to be, entire season, not first month, and I'm going to come back to that in a second. When you have a team that has an out-of-nowhere really good season, and then you start to consider the context of it, you want to circle back to that team more so than, whoa, wait a minute, why are they playing in a December 30th bowl? They're more like a December 23rd bowl. That happened with Duke this year. And you look at the Duke Blue Devils, it's not just that they finished with a 500 or better record and got bowl eligible, because they didn't finish with a 500 record or better. Folks, they won 9 games last year. All right? They got to a good bowl and beat a good team kind of handily, like wood chipper sort of stuff. So when he says the guy from Duke, and again, that's Chris Lowe's on with Jocks. It's not just, well, they got bowl eligible. It's not just, well, hey, well, they were better than bowl eligible. They got to 8 wins and got to a good bowl and beat a good opponent and finished with 9 wins. It's not just that, folks. I just said my favorite word is context. Think of the context at work with Duke Duke basketball right now with Coach K. My gosh, It's more context at work with Duke football this past season. Coach K, I think, got the Duke job in like 1980 or 81. Held it for 4 decades. I bet he won five. Dan, check some of them. I bet he won 5 national championships. And so, I mean, he also took over a program that was in the Final Four in 1978. So that was the Duke basketball program, and he's an all-timer, if not the all-timer. And he's just bitter enough that he may like kick the ghost of John Wooden, for all I know. Maybe he's the greatest ever. That's how great Coach K is. He took over a program that had been in the Final Four 2 years earlier. It's in North Carolina. Like, they invented tobacco and hoops there. That's what they do. You get black lung, and you can hit a J from about 25. So that's what they do. There is the context. That's not what they do in Duke football. I think the total context of taking over for David Cutcliffe, especially on the down end of where that program was, and you respond with that? Okay. How'd that happen? And so you want to see how Duke football, which should have suffered, I mean, a just big-time vacuum. Not cult of personality, because David Cutcliffe would never let it be about himself, but sort of cult of personality. Because it was David Cutcliffe, and you're like, maybe we shouldn't have ever had him in the first place. Do you know where Duke was in the ACC in total offense this last year? 4th. Do you know how in today's game you have a toast season, a little pop-up season? Do you know how you do that? Offense. Because they were 9th in defense. I'm giving you the bird's eye, the flyover, like when you watch the Masters coverage and they everything gets quiet and they play the little music background as they say, this is the tea olive hole. And that's all I'm doing. We're not drilling down. We're not doing anything else. Duke had a pop-up season last year because they scored. And so folks who never even cast an eye towards Raleigh one time in their Raleigh, oh my gosh. I just called an Irishman Scottish, towards Durham in their life, ever. They're going, how'd Duke do that? Oh, Kevin Johns? Chris Lowe just said, yeah, that guy at Duke. I assume he means Kevin Johns, because that's the guy at Duke. And offense is why they won. And so now you get to, I can't say Kevin Johns is how, offense is how they won this year. If someone can correctly distill what Kevin Johns' role in that was, but I'll remove the mystery. It was because when they had the football, that's why they won 9 games. So take from Kevin Johns what you will, but maybe somebody will take Kevin Johns. Dan, how's your Monday?
So far, so good. And I'm a fan just like everybody else. And I think that sometimes in this business, you know, there's so many people, oh, I'm not a fan anymore, blah, 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 all that. I don't really understand that. Why are we doing this if we're not here to also enjoy what is probably one of the coolest jobs on the planet to be able to do, is sit around and watch sports and be able to have an opinion on it. But also, though, being a fan means that sometimes you probably won't have a very rational view of things. And where I'm going with this is that it reminds me of a couple of other times that we've seen Nick Saban hire an offensive coordinator, because there is at least a built-in, hey, he knows what he's good, he knows what he's doing defensively, we'll trust him on that. It seems like that hasn't necessarily been the case offensively. Let me take you back the last couple of examples. Number one, it was Brian Daboll. Remember when they went with him after Lane Kiffin moved on to go to FAU, and there was this thought, here's this kind of husky-looking guy that coached with Bill Belichick in the NFL. Great. We're going to go back. Our quarterback's going to basically become A.J. McCarron
again.
Run
the ball.
Right. That's what this is going to be. It's going to be that boring pro-style offense. And I remember the reporter asked Nick Saban about it during spring practice, and Saban was like, who says we're going to do any of those things? And sure enough, this was an offense that was incredibly productive that year and ended up winning a national title. The other one was Steve Sarkisian when they brought him in, and it was after the debacle with the Atlanta Falcons, and I understand that But my challenge is to Alabama fans is there is number one thing that I know about Nick Saban. As good as he is at evaluating players on the field, he might be even better at evaluating coaches off the field. And if he is bringing in somebody, there should be a built-in trust already. But I know how we are as fans, and I know that there is going to be people, if indeed they don't either A, know who the person is, or B, believe that they've been as productive at the position, there is going to be some consternation.
Dan, tremendous job today. Appreciate your contribution. David on the ones and twos. If we lose him, it'll be to Eminem. Just ripping him off, taking him on tour. Everybody else, appreciate y'all coming. 22 hours from now, back with more of the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.